Hello everyone and welcome to The Entrepreneur's Journey. I am Andy Bryan and today I'm delighted to be speaking with Deborah Crosby. And today we're going to be talking about present to prosper and how you can present, well, in a public speaking sense and prosper from it within your business. We're going to, more importantly though, be talking about Deborah's journey and path in order to get to where she is today, and also the journey and path of a speaker, whether that's a TED speaker or generally a public speaker as a whole. So I'm really excited to be touching on this subject. As always, we're going to be talking about the hero's journey as it evolved, as it has evolved within Deborah's life. So welcome, Deborah. Thank you, first of all, for joining me. And tell me a bit more about yourself before we jump into your journey.
Well, first and foremost, I want to say thank you so much for inviting me to be a guest expert on your show. This is exciting for me in terms of my scope of influence and jumping the pond and communicating what I'm most passionate about, which is public speaking, telling your story and getting your message out there, and absolutely unequivocally inspiring action. So thank you for the invite, and I'm excited to be here, and I'm excited about offering some helpful information to the viewers.
So
you want to know my story, and I would say,
yeah,
when I was in my early 20s, my mailbox was contained a flyer for a storytelling event here in Massachusetts called Lanes. That's for the League for Advancement for New England Storytellers. I showed the flyer to my grandmother, who loved telling stories. She actually used to tell stories to church ladies on Sunday mornings and traveled all over New England to tell stories to church ladies. And I said, "Graham, look, there is actually a conference for what we do every day." Because when we communicated and touched base and talked over the phone or talked in person, it was always about telling stories. And I said, "There's people who actually do this for a living." And I said, "Would you like to come with me?" And at the time, my grandmother was in her late 70s, and she was all on top of that game. We went to the conference together. We attended the first workshop at that conference, and I walked out of that first class with my grandmother, and my grandmother said to me, "Deborah, this is your calling." And I said back to her, "This is what I want to dedicate my life to, is to storytelling. I love story. I'm hardwired for it. It's been embedded in my cultural background in terms of my grandmother and my great-grandmother, and you know, I have an Irish, Nova Scotian, Scottish background where story is part of how we communicate. And I also have a significant amount of Abenaki, Native American Indian influence. My great-grandfather was Abenaki. And so story was also part of that genetic code. And that definitely is something I connect to and relate to on a very, very deep and spiritual level.
Excellent. No, I love your passion for story. As you know, I share the same passion as well.
Clarissa Pinkola
Estes. A bit of feedback there. So.
Yeah. Clarissa Pinkola Estes, who wrote Women Who Run With the Wolves, say stories are maps for the soul. In that, in indigenous cultures, when we're sitting around the campfire, a shaman or spiritual leader of the tribe will almost inevitably tell story so that people can make the transitions from one aspect or rite of passage in life to another more gracefully because they have a map for that. What's missing in our modern culture are those maps for us to listen and understand and comprehend and garner some insight as to how we're going to handle the challenges and difficulties and hurdles of our own life and our own hero's journey. There are platforms surfacing like TED Talks, which are now the modern day storytellers, giving us those maps for the soul, which is so exciting. And that's why I'm here, and that's why I live and breathe, and it's every fiber of my being is about story and the power of storytelling to ignite passion and to guide, educate, inspire, illuminate. There's so many things that stories can do.
So if we go back to your journey at the beginning and we find out where your passion for story first came from, was it back all those years when you were invited to that conference with your nan, or was it even earlier than that?
Yes, it was earlier than that. My grandmother and my great grandmother had a massive influence on me. They were both phenomenal storytellers. And so I grew up with that way of communicating as sort of a family culture. So that was normal. I never thought it was anything special. In fifth grade, I had changed schools and I was extremely shy and painfully introverted, and I never talked. And my teacher sent home a letter home to my mother, concerned that I might be mute. And I was going to need some special classes. And my mother wrote back and said, you know, Deborah's telling stories all the time at home. She produces theatrical productions with the neighbors and her friends. She's always writing scripts and having everybody perform. So, in fact, Deborah is not mute. She's just shy. And so the teacher looked at that letter that my mother wrote. And that day, we had a half hour free period every single day. And this was early on in the school year. And my teacher said to me, well, Deborah, I want you to go down to the library during free period and pick out 5 children's books that would be appropriate for kindergartners. I did that. And then the next day during free period, she said, today you're going to go down to the kindergarten and you're going to read one of those books out loud to the kindergartners.
Yeah.
And I was shaking in my boots because I'm a shy person by nature, and I couldn't believe I had to do that. And yeah. I was told to do that, and I never, you know, balked authority when I was a child. It was like that was the edict. I must do this. So I did go down to the kindergarten and read my first book out loud to the kindergartners, and they loved it. They responded beautifully. And the kindergarten teacher actually requested that I come back. And so for the rest of that school year in fifth grade, I went on a regular basis, on a weekly basis, down to the kindergarten, and I read out loud to them. And I gained this confidence that I do have a voice. I can educate people. I can help people. I can assist people to use the power of their imagination. I was extremely imaginative as a child. Yeah. And I was honored to help little kids. You know, they were younger than me. And it really ignited a passion in me that was a latent passion because I had been so shy prior to that.
Yeah. I can completely relate. I was always quite a shy child myself. I do apologize, I'm getting some feedback. Let me change my microphone settings. Yeah, so hopefully that's better. I think it is already, actually. Fantastic. Can you hear me all right?
Yes. So that experience with my fifth grade teacher definitely pulled me out of my comfort zone, because I was someone who liked being in my little shell. And so I understand when people say, oh, they're shy, you know, is it possible to still speak in public? Is it possible to still get your message out there if you are inherently an introvert? And yes, you absolutely unequivocally can do that. Most of our favorite American actors, and I would suspect also British actors, are shy by nature. But they're so passionate about the craft of acting and performing is that they go beyond their comfort zone and perform. So being an introvert doesn't mean you can't speak and present and tell stories.
No, I completely agree. And again, I'm in the same boat. I've always been an introvert, and I just think we communicate in a slightly different way when we're presenting. And I think that makes us unique in our own way, you know. If I was to ask you then, was there anybody that was a keen inspiration for you, you know, growing into the world of storytelling? May have been from a young age or even later on in your life, that you really thought, wow, they are really a powerful, influential, not only speaker, but storyteller at the same time?
I would definitely say it was my grandmother, Evelyn Early. I used to call her Grammy Evie. And my great-grandmother, Nana Maybell. They both told stories, and they taught me life lessons through storytelling. So they had a massive influence on me. I had a fourth grade teacher, Sister Mary Teresa, who I had been diagnosed at that time that I could barely read at a first grade reading level. And she kept me after school one day, which was an honor and excitement. I mean, being in the presence of Sister Mary Teresa was like the bee's knees. I mean, people used to fight over having the pleasure and the opportunity to be able to stay after with her. This is the kind of teacher, like staying after is usually associated with punishment, but was staying after with Sister Mary Teresa was basically having opportunity to bask in love. And she had me do all the chores, sweeping, cleaning the chalkboard, cleaning the gerbil cage. And when I was done with my chores, I said, what else can I do, sister? And she said, go over to the library corner and pick out the book Charlotte's Web. Now, at the time, I couldn't read that title. I knew it was the book by the cover and the picture on the book. And so she had me hand her the book. We sat down in those little chairs, you know, fourth graders have, which I would have been a 10 at the time. And she sat right next to me, next to my desk, and she cracked open the book and she proceeded to read the first chapter. I was so engrossed and transported in my imagination that I saw the kitchen that little Fern was in, speaking to her dad, talking about Wilbur, this little piglet, this runt piglet, and I saw the kitchen, I saw the sage green metal cabinetry and the old-fashioned ice box, and on the stair landing, I saw and heard the grandfather clock ticking. I was at that farm table, and I could smell the aromas of being in this kitchen of homemade baked bread and sort of being in that fresh country air. And just at the critical moment where Fern was asking her dad if she could take care of this little runt piglet, Wilbur, was when Sister Mary Teresa closed the book. And I was like pulled out of my imagination. And I was like, sister, you have to finish reading the book. And she said, what happened? What happened? Is Wilbur going to be saved? Or is he going to be turned into bacon? And Sister Mary Teresa said, Deborah, you're going to go home and you're going to read this book. And you're going to tell me the rest of the story. And you're going to tell me what happens to Wilbur the piglet. And I didn't have the gumption or the confidence to say I couldn't read. But then Sister Mary Teresa said this. She said, I know that you will do this. And I know that if you can read, worlds of opportunities are going to open up to you that you have no idea about. And I'm going to see you do that. And I look forward to hearing the rest of the story on Monday. Somehow or another, I don't know, to this day, how miraculously she made this possible for me. But I went home. I refused to take my uniform off the entire weekend. And that weekend, I struggled through that book. And I read the entire book. I don't know how I did it. I sounded out. To this day, it's miraculous. And I remember bawling my eyes out on Sunday night at 9 o'clock. Because Charlotte, who passes away. And my mother came into the living room where I was reading, and she's, what happened? I said, oh, Charlotte. I couldn't contain myself. But I did manage, through teardrops and tears falling on the book, to finish reading that, you know, all the little spiders were being born, and Wilbur was happy, and it was a happy ending. And I could not wait to get to school on Monday and tell that story to Sister Mary Teresa. And I was excited, and I was ignited with passion. I had this confidence. And she then proceeded to guide me through the reading process, from barely being able to read at a first grade reading level to reading at an advanced sixth grade reading level in 1 year. And from that point forward in my life, I was always in advanced English and advanced literature courses all the way through my college career. So that woman liberated me, and she empowered me, and she gave me the training and the support and the love and the encouragement to be free. You know, if you're not literate, you will not have opportunities available to you when you are literate. And that, if I didn't learn how to read, that would have affected the trajectory of the rest of my life. And I am eternally grateful to Sister Mary Teresa. And actually, these pointy rim glasses are an homage to her, because she wore pointy rim glasses, and she was one of the most brilliant, funniest, loving, kind, compassionate, intelligent teachers I think I ever had. And how I teach and why I teach is about carrying her legacy forward.
Well, that's amazing. She was obviously a big mentor in your life, a big inspiration in so many different ways.
And if we think about the hero's journey, the hero has this big, you know, thing they want. And I wanted really and truly to know what was happening to this piglet called Wilbur. But on a bigger thing, I just wanted Sister Mary's Teresa's love and approval. That's why I read the book.
Yeah.
And so I started on my hero's journey, and I struggled through that book, just as a hero will struggle. And I made it through to the end, and it changed my life. Just as a hero goes through all those challenges and difficulties,
definitely,
that hero will absolutely unequivocally change. Or as in the acting world, you know, the arc of the character either solves or resolves, or the problem gets resolved in some way. And as a result, they transform, they transcend, they've learned something. And, you know, I've lived that journey over and over and over again in my life, and with the earliest introduction, you know, at 10 at fourth grade.
And it's amazing, obviously, not only to see that transformation within you within that short time, but when you were reciting that back, you know, when you listen to story, you really do get absorbed. You know, you really do get so connected, you know, and your connection to the story and Wilbur, you know, you felt a part of that journey, felt a part of that story. And I believe that's what storytelling is all about, you know, bringing that connection into you so that you feel a part of the whole process. So let me ask about the actual journey of a speaker and a TED Talker.
Yeah.
We were going to talk about that as well today. So looking at the start of a journey, where would you say the start of a journey would be for a TED Talker if they were looking to start speaking professionally?
There are several,
and obviously delivering the TED Talk.
Yeah, there are several outlets for speaking in public. TED Talk is one of them. And because TED Talks are so popular right now, there's also Google Talks, and there's Inbound that are internet-based. I mean, they film them at a live location, but then they go viral through YouTube. And TED Talks has definitely changed the public speaking arena, where a speaker has the potential to have a global impact. And that's really powerful. This is an amazing time in history. So I personally have an adoration and a respect for the TED Talk model. And I think since that standard is so exceptionally high, it can be applied to any public speaking engagement, whether it's a networking event for folks that you're speaking to in a smaller group, to having massive international stage where you have, you know, over 20 million views like Brené Brown. It really is the scope.
Yeah.
So the first step in terms of having someone come to me for public speaking training is do you have a topic or an idea, a concept for your talk? Do you have a message that you're trying to get out? And depending on where they're at in their understanding of whether they have a message or not, I work with them in the brainstorming process. So I work with neophytes who have not had any experience with public speaking at all to nationally publish, internationally publish authors and coaches and experts who definitely know what they want to talk about, have content to work to talk about, but they need help with other aspects of the public speaking arena. So the first part is brainstorming and coming up with an idea for your talk and coming up with a catchy title. So that's really essential. And the other elements is once there is that idea, how do you speak to that idea through story, through statistics, through facts, through anecdotes, quantifiable information, so that it's not just subjective, that you're substantiating the subjective with the objective. And then that's kind of fun. And then finding really cool and powerful images to include in your talk. I love the use of imagery. I'm not a big fan of using lots of graphs and statistics because it's difficult for a lot of people to really grasp that. If you keep your stats to about 3 and keep your statistics really, really simple, your graphs really, really basic, it's much easier for folks to comprehend that information. And then at the end of your talk, there is, some kind of call to action. What if you're a speaker and you're representing a charity or an organization and you want a call to action, which is raising funds, then you want to be able to do that for the charity. If you're a coach or an expert, where people actually seek out your advice, then the call to action would be to sign up for their program or their package. If you're an author, obviously you hopefully want to inspire people to purchase your book. But the thing about TED Talks, and this is really important, is that you cannot actively promote yourself as a coach or an expert or an author. You have to do this very soft, softly. It has to be inherent in your talk. You can't sell directly. Selling is not, and proselytizing and lecturing is a big no-no in the TED world. And I think if anyone thinks about it this way, it's really the most respectful way to present.
Definitely. I completely agree. What I was going to ask was, what makes a lasting impression in regards to a TED talk?
Oh my gosh.
How do we create that lasting impression? That,
there's a lot of factors, and I think enthusiasm and passion wins the day. Having a conviction for your content is really, really important. And I would say there's a TED Talk Bible in terms of, these are the core elements, 10 core elements that they're looking for in order for your TED Talk to be accepted. And at the heart of that is willingness to be vulnerable. And that's what sets you apart from giving a lecture. So Brené Brown speaks about vulnerability, but she opens her talk that has over 20 million views with being vulnerable. And in that vulnerability, you can almost inevitably find humor because, vulnerability means I'm showing you my ouch. I'm showing you where, it's uncomfortable for me. And human beings say, oh, you're willing to take that risk to be authentic and to be real, then I'm going to relate to you in a real manner. So I would say vulnerability is absolutely an essential agreement. Ingredient and agreements, because you have to agree to do that, for a great talk.
Yeah. Let me ask you then, in terms of a journey of a speaker, and in terms of the journey of a speech, you could say, would you say there is a natural flow and a natural journey that a speaker goes through during a presentation?
Yes, there is. So depending on, again, their level of experience or comfort with speaking, I will watch and observe. At a certain point, as their coach and trainer, I know at some point in that journey of from coming up with the idea or concept of the talk, crafting the writing of that talk, and then practicing and performing and presenting that talk through acting technique and media technique, there's going to be some place where I know my client or clients will experience some resistance. It's part of the journey. Yeah. And resistance is they're facing some aspect of themselves that is uncomfortable for them or unfamiliar territory. And so they don't know how to traverse or navigate themselves through that uncomfortable territory because they haven't been there before. So for some people, yeah. It literally is the writing process. And so I have been trained by 3 different improv companies, which helps liberate people's imaginations and say yes to ideas. And there's several techniques and workshop experiences and exercises I can walk people through where I can help them free up their inner writer. For other people, it is actually experience of memorization. And so I have tools in my tool bag to offer people some helpful techniques to enhance the memorization process. And that comes from my acting training. For other people, it's the actual performance, because it is showtime. If you're on a big stage, it is time to perform. Shakespeare said all the world's a stage. And so they don't have in their tool bag or in their experience base how to work their material, how to present their content, and how to actually work their audience and work their stage, like physically work their stage in terms of what's called blocking. Yeah. They wouldn't know if they have not had any trainer exposure to that. And how to handle the jitters and how to handle your breath and how to, you know, change your rate of speed for dramatic effect. There's so many elements. So really in that journey from the concept to the performance, there are several places that my clients can face a hurdle or resistance. And my job as the coach is to gracefully and easily facilitate that transition. Or in Hero's Journey language, I am the Yoda and they are Luke Skywalker. And I'm saying the force may be with you, and here are some tools and some techniques and exercises so that you can be free.
Definitely. No, I love it. And it's, there must be a massive journey there. There is a huge journey there. I mean, if we look back on my public speaking journey as a whole, myself, as how far I've evolved, you know, I had a huge fear of public speaking. I've told the story many times, so people that know me will relate to this story already, but when I was at university, I remember delivering a talk and presentation, and I didn't realize I had this huge fear back then. I delivered one of my projects to the people in the audience, and these were all just my classmates really, but we had about 40 to 50 people in our class, and I just bottled it. I just bottled it at that time, and I think I went through some of it, but I couldn't complete it. But anyway, once I'd left university, did a lot of talks at university anyway, and did a lot of public speaking courses after I'd left. Some of them were really well-known professional speaker trainings now. And I also went through Toastmasters, the Toastmaster program. And I was lucky enough, my speaking went from being fearful to actually, I absolutely love it now. And that journey was incredible. But you know, all the trials and tribulations you go through, I spoke about this a few times, but if you think about the 10 speeches in a competent communicator manual, they are your road of trials, you know, in order to become competent in what you're doing. So imagine all of the work that you put into what you do is the road of trials in order for them to learn and develop in all the different areas of public speaking and crafting an incredible speech that would be truly memorable for people, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely an honor, and I think Toastmasters is a really great not-for-profit organization where you can be in a community of like-minded individuals who also have a goal to speak in public. Frequently, when people have gone through the through the Toastmasters training, they frequently will come seek my expertise out because they've reached a ceiling in terms of how much that nonprofit organization can offer them. Because it's really a community of peers. And I recently had a client say to his brother over the Christmas holidays, his brother was saying to my client, "Oh, I'm thinking of joining Toastmasters." And my client responded back, "Don't go to Toastmasters. Go to see Deborah because she's Toastmasters on steroids."
I can certainly relate.
I love that. So Toastmasters is a great outlet to get support and to be in that community where you can practice and work your material. And for folks who are serious about really being professional and getting out there as a speaker, working with a coach is really going to help facilitate that more rapidly and more easily because a coach is going to give you tools and techniques and training and support that you might not find in a community group.
I completely agree, Anna, and your program sounds incredible and it sounds amazing. It'd be interesting to see the journey that people go on, you know, the journey you share with people. Because leaving a lasting impression in a speech is no easy feat, but I do think it's possible for each and every one of us to create. But it's about how we go about doing that. So where can we find out more about yourself, your program? Because we are coming towards the end of the show, as in the show itself, and then we've got Q&A to finish up. So where can we find out more about your work?
Well, most people follow me on Facebook and what I'm doing on Facebook, and I will be launching a Present to Prosper website soon, but in the interim, people can actually contact me through LinkedIn or through Facebook or through my email, deborahcrosby.presenttoprosper@gmail.com. But, you know, I would say Facebook or LinkedIn is the best way to reach me.
Fantastic. So you have a website coming up very soon.
Yes. And Present to Prosper is a play on word because when you are present, you give a gift to your audience. And when we're presenting well, it is also a gift to our audience. And so there is a certain presence that when you're working on top of your A game, there is a presence that you bring that absolutely makes what you have to say attractive. And I really love that my training program is very comprehensive, including a practice called radical freedom to free up people's energy and thought patterns so that they can be operating at a peak potential when they're presenting.
Fantastic. I love that play on words. And I think, you know, public speaking is all about being present. You know, because it's all about the gift you're giving your audience, isn't it? Like you say.
Yeah.
You know, and if you can't be present within yourself, you know.
Well, in a sense, when one of my clients is presenting in public, they are the shaman or they are the leader or they are the Yoda and the audience is Luke Skywalker. You are actually also bringing your audience through that journey as well. And having that presence and state of mind gives you that ability to respond authentically in the moment to what's needed from your audience. And when people can do that beautifully, it's brilliant to watch.
Excellent. Well, again, it's fantastic. And thank you for sharing your journey and story today and the journey of a TED talker and speaker. What I'll do today is just let everybody know we are live every week at 8 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time and 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And we've got some other phenomenal guests, very much like Deborah, who share their journey and story to success, their trials and tribulations, the road of trials, and some of the pain points that they've, you know, sadly gone through in their life, but all to create the life that they have today so they can be heroes in their own business. So for those of you who want to join the conversation, the Seats are now open for you in the audience to jump in, ask Deborah some questions. If not, I will continue asking a few more questions to Deborah, slightly more off the cuff and slightly a bit more relaxed. But feel free to jump into the seat, and we look forward to having you with us. Excellent. So let me ask you a few more questions then. What would you say is some of the biggest challenges people face when it comes to, you know, I said earlier, creating a memorable speech. If I was to ask that again, what would you say in terms of challenges that people face in order to create that memorable speech?
I think for many people, they worry about their worthiness to present an idea. You know, speaking in public is one of the scariest and considered one of the highest stress inducing experiences a human being can go through. And you really do need to connect with your passion, but inevitably I watch and witness folks feeling that they really love this idea, or they're excited or enthusiastic about a message, but almost they don't feel like they're good enough to talk about it. And so part of the radical freedom techniques that I walk people through is to help them liberate themselves from their own limiting thoughts and limiting thought processes. That's my little dog who's going out for a walk now.
That's all right. That's interesting. I'd imagine that's massively valuable for people. I mean, especially people like myself. All those years ago when I was having that huge fear, you know, if I didn't have someone that could help me get through that fear, you know, then that would have been another different step and another different journey.
Yeah, what I love about the radical freedom practice that I bring to the table with my clients is, you know, frequently that you hear, you know, feel the fear and do it anyway. And through radical freedom, I can actually help assist my clients to release the energy and vibration of fear and raise their vibration to, basically equanimity, peace, and to feel good. And that I help them bring conscious awareness to, you know, what's actually going on when adrenaline is pumping through your system, and what can you do to combat the stress response and induce the relaxation response. So there's a lot of tools that I bring to the table to really help liberate people to get their story and their message out there, because we're at a time in history when, you know, we really need to start thinking about out of the box in terms of our resources and what's happening with the planet. And I think, we all are invited to mastery in terms of adding some solutions to what's going on globally right now.
No, I completely agree. It's how can we pass our message on to more people around the world? How can we inspire others to live sustainably? How can we inspire others to, you know, no matter whether you live in a flat, whether you live in a large house, how can you grow your own fruit and veg in your house without having to, you know, grow it outdoors in a garden which you don't have, you know? And how can we liberate people like you do in order to believe in themselves and make a huge difference in their own lives, you know? And that all comes through, you know, speaking and having people share their stories, you know? I thought I'd share that. I'm passionate about that too. No, it's good. It made me think, feel the fear and do it anyway. I wrote an article about this just the other day, and I love the whole concept of feeling the fear and doing it anyway. But in some respects, like you're saying, you know, feeling the fear and doing it anyway, sometimes it's not good enough, because we've got so much fear deep within us that feeling the fear and just doing it anyway isn't, we just can't do it, because it's paralyzing in some respects. And sometimes it's deep unconscious blocks. So would you say your liberating technique is all about, you know, instead of feeling the fear and doing it anyway, breaking that cycle of, and that fear within you rather than feeling it?
It's unhooking the nervous system from detrimental patterns. And most of those are thought patterns are unconscious. And how do you bring conscious awareness to thought patterns that may have started at a really young age. They could be just part of your cultural makeup in terms of, you know, how your family communicated. Unwritten rules that we have within our school systems and our education systems that reward extroverts but don't reward introverts. There's a gamut of things that go on that, you know, our brain starts to get hardwired. And so I assist my clients through a very easy to learn and easy to apply system so they can liberate themselves from all those blocks so they can access their most powerful and empowered authentic self, which is, you know, coming from a place of vitality and an awesomeness and energy, you know, freeing up your energy so that you can reside in this place of just a good feeling and good vibration. You know, research shows that our thoughts have a frequency. What's frequency? Frequency is a vibration. And so if you're speaking, but internally you're still operating from a vibration or frequency or a limited thought process, you're not going to enjoy your experience of speaking to the optimal level that you could possibly enjoy it. If you're speaking and your whole objective is to have a positive impact on your audience, why wouldn't you also experience and give that gift to yourself as well? So, and, you know, I frequently speak to the topic of unconditional friendliness. Well, unconditional friendliness starts from inside. You know, it's your gold and it's your golden wholeness that brings that mirror to your audience so they can then also be able to access that as well. So it's about operating from the inside out on an energetic level. And then whatever you have to say is riding on those waves, those positive waves, opposed to, you know, fear.
Definitely. And it's interesting you going through that. Let me just change the headphones, microphones again. That always helps. It's interesting you going through that, that, you know, it does make me think that your whole process is the journey of becoming a hero speaker, you know, that Luke Skywalker, so that they can share the message
with
the world.
May the force be with you.
Like, look at, like, even look at the start of your journey, the start of our journey is we look at the ego and what it represents, and it's all the societal conditions, you know, that then create the fears within us, which are our shadow side of who we are. So your technique of embracing the introvert, you know, and unlocking that within your freedom technique, so that they can fully break free is incredible. And then that liberation at the end where they bring it all together as a whole, you know, that's the soul fulfillment that they get at the end of their journey. So I could see the whole process panning out, you know, in my mind. So thank you for sharing that. I just was like, wow, it's very interesting.
Well, I mean, think about this. You know, we talk about the hero's journey in the traditional sense of myths and legends. You know, Joseph Campbell obviously speaks to that. I know you really are an aficionado of his work. In myths and legends and traditional folk tales and fairy tales, the hero will frequently face external challenges, external difficulties, scary things like dragons. They're just a metaphor for our own internal dragon, right? It's facing that inside. So I frequently make the analogy is that we're either holding on to the tail desperately of this energy, you know, symbolically speaking, the dragon, and we're being whipped around, or through radical freedom, which is really a beautiful and easy to learn, easy to apply technique where folks can hold the reins of that energy vis-a-vis the dragon. You don't have to slay the dragon. Really make friends with the dragon, because that dragon has a purpose. Yeah. And it's not about facing your fears, it's about making friends with that and seeing the gift the fear has to offer you, which is a completely different paradigm than, you know, feel the fear and do it anyway. Your brain cannot tell the difference between emotional pain and physical pain. And it is painful. Fear is painful. Why operate from that place when you can easily make a shift in your consciousness and awareness and through tools, very simple tools and techniques, through radical freedom, to be operating from a place of power and empowerment and authentic energy, your authentic self. And, you know, have your passion and your enthusiasm and your energy, your intellect, your imagination, your intuition and instinct all at your access in the moment. Because there isn't any barrier or blocks or fear getting in your way or limiting thinking process getting in your way of being the best of who you really are meant to be.
Definitely. Agree. And I want to say thank you very much. We have come to the end of our show. I know there's so much more we can talk about, and it's a real shame. But I did want to say thank you very much for joining me again. As always, for those of you who want to tune in again next week, we're live at 8 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time and 3 p.m. Eastern Time if you're watching over in the States. Finally, last question again. Where can we find out more about
yourself? Make friends with me, Deborah Crosby, and that's spelled D-E-B-R-A, Crosby, C-R-O-S-B-Y, on Facebook, Book, or LinkedIn. On LinkedIn, you will see Present to Prosper. Also on Google, you'll see my bio, Present to Prosper. And I have we'll be launching a Present to Prosper Facebook page as well. And I will be introducing an online group experience where people can be introduced in a complimentary session on, you know, just how to brainstorm an idea for a talk, for example. So I'll be offering that as well. So people should keep tabs of what I'm doing on Facebook and on LinkedIn so that they can drop in on some of these experiences that I'll be offering complimentary.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much again. Wish you all the best with your amazing program. And thank you all again for tuning in, and we'll see you again next
week. Thank you so much, Andy. I really had a great time, and you did a great job with the interview, and it was a pleasure.
Thanks very much, Anna. See you all soon. Bye for now.
The Entrepreneur's Journey. Create your empowering business story. Interviewing successful entrepreneurs from around the world to share their inspiring journey to success. Tune in live every week for your weekly dose of inspiration. Visit www.theentrepreneursjourney.tv for previous episodes.